Breaking news today on Seculo as we're suing Biden in a massive new lawsuit.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
We've got a lot to talk about today on Seculo. First half hour, we're going to be focusing it on the work the ACLJ is doing to protect your rights. And it even involves an ACLJ, one of our senior advisors. I'll get to that in a moment. The second half hour, we're going to get more into politics as well, with the DeSantis announcement imminent next week. And we want to hear from you on that. That'll be in the second half hour. So a lot to talk about on the broadcast. Let me get right to it. The ACLJ is filing a major lawsuit against President Biden and his administration today. We've been warning you of the deep state corruption. We've been talking about it all week and weeks on this broadcast on Seculo and how the deep state bureaucracy is, as you know, it's in the back pocket of the left. They basically work in tandem. It's like an appendage of the Democrat Party now. And that's a very, again, dangerous thing in our country. And how they put their foot on the scale of justice when it comes to conservatives and how they treat conservatives. We talked about the dual systems of justice that have arisen inside the United States of America. But now we have proof, yet again, and we're heading to federal court. When our own ACLJ Senior Advisor for National Security and Foreign Policy, you know him, Rick Rennell, left office as Acting Director of National Intelligence. He was also the ambassador to Germany. But when he left his DNI, the left in the mainstream media submitted a FOIA very broadly, which is not supposed to how FOIA is supposed to work. If we sit one this broad, it'd take a year to get a response, and the response would be is, this was way too broad, you have to narrow it. But this is what they wrote, a left-wing media outlet, I think it was BuzzFeed. They submitted a FOIA for all of his emails and text messages, all of them, while he was serving as Director of National Intelligence. You would think, yeah, of all the people that you might not get all of their emails and text messages would be the person overseeing every U.S. intelligence department. It doesn't mean that some might be subject to FOIA. We certainly file against the intelligence community as well. But that's about the highest bar when it comes to trying to get information under the Freedom of Information Act when you're asking for it from the intel community. But in the fastest response we've ever seen, the deep state handed over every single document requested by BuzzFeed and those media outlets with minimal redactions, under a year. They never had to go to court. We always have to go to court. And so your ACLJ has submitted a FOIA request for all of the Biden DNI, Avril Haines emails about what they did in this matter. Why did they just put all of his emails forward without fighting back on any of those issues? Why didn't they say, hey, this is too broad? What actual information are you looking for about Rick Rennell when he was acting Director of National Intelligence? So on the top of that, we have uncovered, and this is new case law in D.C., in the federal court in D.C., a new way to approach FOIAs. Folks, this is groundbreaking, so I don't want you to miss it. There is an entirely new way. It involves the violation of the First Amendment and what we've been talking about, this two systems of justice, viewpoint discrimination, treating one requester different than another, a court has found is unconstitutional. So we're going to be the first to take this directly to the federal system, not just the municipality system, but to the federal system. Ben Sisney, a senior counsel with the ACLJ, is going to be joining us. He leads our FOIA effort. He will be joining us in the next segment to walk through how big of a deal. This is a huge deal in our FOIA work. It transforms it. Donate today. Support the work of the ACLJ. This is the kind of work we're doing. Donate today. ACLJ.org. We'll be right back. right, folks, this is brand spanking new. And this is a whole new way to look at FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. And I want to give credit to Ben Sisney from our team, who is constantly digging through, trying to give us an upper hand when we are battling the federal government for documents that we are entitled to under federal law. The FOIA laws, the Freedom of Information Act laws, put in place for these federal agencies a process so that we can get the information we want from those agencies with minimal redactions, with minimal exceptions, and yet the norm is they don't respond, and then you have to sue them, and then you're in court, and then it takes so long in court, the judge finally tells them you've got to start complying, and then you've got to keep fighting because they don't comply entirely. That's wrong. That's not how the law was ever supposed to work. But I want to go right to Ben Sisney, our senior counsel, who is in Washington, D.C. And Ben, let's start with this initial FOIA. We filed it 2 years ago when BuzzFeed News got all of this information about our colleague Rick Rennell when he was serving as Director of National Intelligence.
That's right. And they got that information, and the best I can tell, what I would describe as record-breaking time, at least as far as I can tell, is hard to tell specifically because they didn't even have to file a lawsuit. And as you know, reporting of lawsuits and complaints and these litigation on the online databases is really the only way from the outside you can tell exactly what's happening. But the best we can tell, they got it in a record-breaking time. They got, I want to point out something too. They got it without qualifiers like subject matter and things that we're constantly made to comply with. They got it without having to file a lawsuit, which we, as you pointed out, really essentially always have to do. And so we do what we have to do to get it. And the double standard was just obvious. And I remember you and I and our team discussing this back then. The double standard was just obvious, but how do you prove it, right? And so through our practice here with the FOIA litigation, let's send a mirror FOIA. Let's send something similar. Let's see what happens when we do this. And nothing happened. And as you mentioned, over 2 years have passed, and still nothing. Not even a letter, Jordan. Not even an acknowledgement. And over 2 years. So, you know what? It's time to take it to the next level. We're doing that. We're filing that today, as you mentioned. But also, as you pointed out, this new angle, this new approach.
I'm going to jump in on this. This, I think, is so important. Is sometimes it's worth holding these FOIAs because you want to do enough research to say, you know what? Is there some other way we can go about our FOIA practice? I think, Ben, you've found a way that may revolutionize the FOIA practice as we move forward. Tell people about it.
I hope so, Jordan. And that's the goal, because ultimately the goal for our practice is transparency and government accountability, getting information about what our government is up to Americans, to our members and our viewers. To expand that and try to take that to the next level, using some recent case law that we came across here in this district, recognizing the validity of a claim in federal court against a government actor for violating the First Amendment by basically treating a FOIA requester differently based on the content or viewpoint that requester has. As you know full well, that's a subset of First Amendment jurisprudence. And violations of the First Amendment can take many different forms. And this particular subset involves denying, treating somebody differently or denying a benefit or a right, something you're entitled to, which the FOIA law provides, based on their viewpoint or the content of their expression or what they're asking for or what they do with the information they get. And as I was reading that court opinion, I was realizing, wow, that's exactly what we're wrestling with a federal agency, not the municipal government of D.C., which, as you know, is quasi-federal, quasi-municipal. But why can't we do this with the federal agency? Because that's exactly what they're doing. So We're doing it. We added a count too, and that's part of what's getting filed today. And I really look forward to that, especially getting to the discovery stage.
Holding it in my hands, folks, you can see it, and we'll get it online once it's filed. So I would encourage you to check out count two. I mean, the violation of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution in a FOIA case because of a lack of response. This is something brand new that we are doing at the ACLJ, and I think has ever been done directly in the federal matter. I mean, Ben, to me, what it does is it puts viewpoint discrimination right at the heart of the FOIA request, which opens up even more documents that could be available under FOIA, like, why are you dragging your feet? Are you dragging your feet because you don't like the viewpoint of the ACLJ, but you do like the viewpoint of BuzzFeed, who was going to beat up on Rick Grenell, but you don't like ACLJ because they may be beating up on the current ODNI?
That's exactly right. And the channel for that could be another follow-up FOIA request, which we very well may do. But more specifically, and I think what excites me the most, is the opportunity to get into the discovery stage, to get that information under the auspices of a federal court order and the discovery rules, and really to have the opportunity to expose and hold an agency accountable for exactly the kind of behavior you're discussing today and that we've talked about, and that's been an ACLJ issue for as long as I can remember. And it was part of the whole underlying rationale of our FOIA practice and government accountability project that you and our leadership put together so we can help serve the American people as a conduit of information and accountability for our government. And this is another opportunity and a new way, as you're pointing out, for us to be able to do that and take this whole thing to the next level.
Hey Ben, I have a question for you. You got a lot of comments coming in. Maybe people aren't as familiar with the FOIA process in general. Can you walk us through a little bit of what you're doing when it comes to the FOIA situation and what makes this one so different comparatively? Because you look at it, people hear the word FOIA thrown around a lot. I don't know if people understand the process and also the time it takes to get a lot of this done.
Absolutely, Logan. So the FOIA process in general involves a letter, some issue. We become aware of some issue or circumstance or news reporting of something. We put together a letter. We send it off to the agency. You have to wait about a month. Usually they respond, but it's in a way that's not compliant with the law. That gives us a green light to take it into federal court. We do that. And after a series of litigation steps that are required in federal court, the agencies start producing the records that we were entitled to, and we go back and forth. They redact this, or they withhold that, or it's taking too long, those kind of issues. But we have the power, the supervision of a federal court judge overseeing that, and then we'll take that all the way through the process. But this one is different because it's not just a violation of the FOIA, of the law, the public records law that we're claiming, but actually a violation of the First Amendment.
And when we say First Amendment, Ben, I mean, that's the First Amendment rights of the ACLJ. That's the First Amendment rights of our supporters who donate to get these FOIAs done and our members at the ACLJ. Because as we allege in our complaint, that the defendant, ODNI, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, gave the ACLJ's FOIA request unfavorable treatment because of the ACLJ's inclination to criticize the agency. It is the core of viewpoint discrimination that we believe now can be applied in the FOIA litigation process. And that could fundamentally change things in our favor in a huge way.
I'm confident it will, and I look forward to the opportunity to litigate this and to build this out even further and take this forward. And like I mentioned, to get to the discovery stage where we can take it beyond the allegations and the facts that we've already compiled, but get more specifics, the internal communications and things that we would only be entitled to in discovery. Because remember, Jordan, there are things that we can't get through FOIA that we can get through federal discovery. And that's part of the goal here. We want to get to that stage and really test this claim. See what they've got. They've got to show their cards. That's part of the point here. And it's such a great merger of our public our government accountability project, but also another key ACLJ issue: the First Amendment speech and expression. another way to hold our government accountable connected to the FOIA practice, but also the United States Constitution itself.
Folks, I think you can see how excited we are about this new opportunity amongst FOIA. And I was talking to Ben late last night and our team late last night, because I know you're the type of audience that we could explain this to. And Ben, I appreciate you joining us while you're in the midst of this to walk people through the importance. It is that important. It fundamentally alters in a positive way the way we can get information that we are entitled to under law from federal agencies, that they can no longer discriminate against our claims because we happen to be conservatives or not in line with the party in charge. And they can't just dump everybody else's, like when some liberal group wants Rick Rinnell's info and they just dump it with no court case. So we've got examples, we've got history, we've got facts, and now we're taking it to court. Support our work. Donate today. Welcome back to Secular. We are excited about this new opportunity to hold the government accountable. It's not all we do at the ACLJ, but it's certainly an important role, especially when you see, I mean, just think about this week, the amount of executive agency abuse that we have learned about, whether it's the CIA impacting and influencing our elections with that phony Hunter Biden letter on the laptop. When you look at the fact that the FBI has not cleaned up, and the Durham report, which I wish that more people were held accountable, but the idea that investigation was started when they had no evidence to start the investigation on, all they had was a salacious report from an informant that shouldn't have been trusted. And even if that was trusted, they didn't do their homework before opening up a full-scale investigation and accepting it all as 100% fact. So we know what we're up against in Washington. I just want to say again, kudos to Ben Sisney from our team, because I think he has unlocked, and I'm not kidding about this, an entirely new way to approach FOIA. Because if you can show, and in this matter involving Rick Rinnell, we can directly, that when one group asked for Rick's information when he was Director of National Intelligence, all they said was all of it, emails and text. And they got him within a year, no lawsuit. When we ask for the current ODNI's information, and you say all, we hear nothing for 2 years. Okay, we were kind of planning this. And ultimately, they would usually then write back, when you file a lawsuit, which we now have, that you can't be that broad. Well, then we're going to point to the other one and say, well, why didn't you do that then? You didn't ask for them to be more specific. And by the way, this delay that you have made us incur is a violation of the First Amendment. So you've got two major problems, DNI, and you can't play politics. You can't deny us the info we're entitled to as Americans because we happen to share a different policy view than your current administration. So we are fighting back there aggressively. Logan, let's go to the phone.
Yep, let's go to Mary Ellen, who's calling in Illinois. You're on the air, Mary Ellen.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so excited to hear this because we've been praying for you all. And I'm one of the facilitators for the 24/7 National Strategic Prayer Call. And there's a few, you know, a couple hundred of us. There are people from all over the country who call in and pray for, and it's been going on every hour since November 11, 2016, praying for the president and, oh, you just name it. We've been praying, and many people call in, not just me, and we pray for different things that you all are going through or working on. And when I hear this, because lately we've been praying for divine strategies as you work on your cases. So when I heard this, it's like, oh, praise the Lord, that's an answer to prayer. So just know that many are out there across the country praying for you all.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. Yeah, I think that's something that's really important for our listeners to hear, and I always appreciate your calling in. There is a big part of the ACLJ in the history of the ACLJ, and it's something I always say, which is if we can change the playbook, we can change the world. And I think that is a big part of this, which is finding new ways to take on issues that maybe seem set in their ways. Whether it's the way we handled religious freedom in the old days by coming up with it being a free speech argument, it's a very similar way. So as you said, looking for new strategies, and as I said, if you change the playbook, you can change the world. I really do believe that.
We're doing it right now with life. because for so many years, my entire life, Roe and my dad's entire life, the entire life of the ACLJ, it was Roe hanging over everything we did when it came to abortion. You had to work within those bounds and all these different partial birth abortion bans. And did that violate? Did that what? Now that's all been cleared. Yeah. And so we had a huge victory yesterday in North Carolina through ACLJ action, where we actually mobilized grassroots protest through ACLJ action and overrode a Democrat governor's veto of a law that would prevent abortion after 12 weeks. The current law was at 20 weeks. So we have saved lives, saved children's lives in North Carolina because of your support to the ACLJ. But we are, as you said, Logan, having to do it differently. We have to, again, courts have shifted. Places that used to be tough courts are better courts. The Supreme Court is very different. State courts are different. And so all the places that we're looking right now, you might have noticed that just in the past week, we filed three new major cases at the ACLJ. I mean, we filed in Nevada in that case involving the pornographic monologue. We filed in Washington State, that involving, again, the park volunteer whose private vehicle's got a Trump sticker on it, a vehicle he does not use while he is working for the Park Service. He used a Park Service vehicle, and when he's a volunteer, he parks it away so people don't even see it. One person saw it, complained, and now he was told, take him off or you're fired. And we're fighting back for him. We are taking an aggressive approach when it comes to parental rights. So we want to make sure you know, because I think under the Trump years, just to be quite honest with you, you saw us representing some very high-profile people, like the President of the United States. Can't get much more high-profile than that. And I wouldn't be upset with you to think, well, maybe the ACLJ's gotten too big for me. I don't like that they're the work that they're doing, but I wonder if they can do my case or my issue. We absolutely can. The Trumps and those things are one-offs. What we're here to do is represent grassroots Americans who may have a tough time even affording an attorney or finding an attorney willing to fight these battles. So we'll come in, and oftentimes we'll get an attorney locally, but we handle all those costs for you. You just have to be willing to fight back against the wrongdoing. So if you are, and you feel like you've got one of those situations right now, I want you to contact us at aclj.org/help. And every time you do that, it's a real ACLJ attorney who responds. Yes, there are some legal matters we cannot do as the ACLJ. But if we can do it, we will fight with you. And the best way for you to know if we can do it is for you to ask aclj.org/help. We're looking at cases right now involving counselors who are Christian in the public school systems in Massachusetts, having their license potentially revoked because they have their own beliefs when counseling young people. You can imagine what those issues are, abortion and gender. But again, you can't exclude a group of counselors because of their religious beliefs. That's a basic constitutional law violation, and they're willing to fight back. So that, again, is something you want to pay attention to through ACLJ. We are there for you. We are there for you. If you think, like we were talking about yesterday, the FBI is trying to infiltrate your church, if you have someone show up kind of out of the blue asking a lot of questions, asking questions that don't make sense, like, are there any groups inside here that seem extreme? Anybody here who seems like they want to start some push against the federal government? You need to contact us at aclj.org/help. If you're a pro-life activist, you feel like you're being harassed by the IRS or FBI or both, contact us, aclj.org/help. We know how to handle these situations, and we know how to win. aclj.org/help. And then, Logan, of course, I can go through all of that and say we can do all of that because we have a great group of donors that makes it finances available so we can.
Yep, you can do that today. Be part of that team. Be part of our team. Go to aclj.org right now. If you don't get the second half hour of the broadcast or your local station, find us broadcasting live right now on Rumble, as well as aclj.org and all your favorite social media platforms. We'll be right back with the second half hour, Secular.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Secular. And now your host, Jordan Secular.
Hey, welcome back to Secular. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So we want to spend that first half hour. We don't always do it, but on the work of the ACLJ, and just really some groundbreaking new work we're doing under the FOIA practice of the ACLJ, the Freedom of Information Act practice, now that we can include in some matters a First Amendment violation, a viewpoint discrimination element, which brings in a whole host of new discovery as well. I think this is groundbreaking. I think we are the first to do it this way. I've not heard of another organization, conservative or liberal, that works on FOIAs. There's nothing against them. I just don't think they may have done the research to see how this would apply. They might not have had the right case, but because of Rick Grenell and the attacks on him constantly coming in from the liberal media, trying to get every email he ever wrote as DNI and every text he ever sent as DNI, he's in a unique position. When I sent that email to him, he said, "Let's do it." So it's great to have even team members at the ACLJ willing to go to court, willing to say, "Yeah, I want to fight back on this." But you don't have to be Rick Grenell to fight back, Logan. And that's the important part of the ACLJ story always.
No, a lot of times it's just easier to explain sort of those big picture stories. But we are handling individual cases every day, whether that's legally, whether that's in media. You saw what we've done in Nevada. It's become a local story there. Now it's becoming a national story. We're bringing a lot of attention to it. So we can utilize our incredibly strong legal arm and our incredibly strong media arm to really get this in front of places that other organizations simply can't. There's a lot of other great organizations, but they maybe don't have the breadth that we have in terms of being able to really infiltrate the media, infiltrate the courtroom, and really get in there and win for you. And if you're one of those people who, like you said, who may need help, and it's within our scope, we always say that. Obviously, there are certain things we're not handling at the ACLJ. If you need, you know, family law type stuff, right, that's not really our area.
The divorce attorneys were not the right place to go.
That's not us. But you can see that clearly on our website, aclj.org/help. It'll tell you. And if it's within our scope, or we even think it may be within our scope, someone will reach out to you and talk to you.
Yeah, let me give you an example of one you might not think. We're working in Missouri right now. They have this tax. It's a 1% tax on people who work inside St. Louis, Missouri. Now, a lot of people have not returned back to St. Louis. So St. Louis tried to reform their law to say, well, even if you work from home, if you're working for a St. Louis company, they can still take that 1% tax. And the process to get that refunded is very difficult. So we haven't fully engaged it yet, but I just want to give you an example of yet another issue the ACLJ, you know, again, your financial liberty. And we are, again, an organization always fighting back for the people when we believe they are being taxed illegally and wrongfully. So, again, if your city's got those kind of policies in place, we'd love to hear about it. ACLJ.org/help. Out in Washington State, you've got one of the most extreme laws we've seen passed where if a child between the age of 10 and 17 runs away and they go to a care facility, and that could be a Christian facility. And now they have on the books that the care facility doesn't have to immediately notify the parents. They can if they think they can reconcile, but they don't have to. And they can actually provide at no cost to the child an abortion or a gender change. Not just the beginning, but the entire process. If the child wants that. I say child because it's 10 to 17. We're working with potential clients there. So you are going to see a lot of new ACLJ action in the courts because we are fighting back against the extreme left.
You know, a lot of new people join us on Rumble and all these new platforms each and every day. I saw someone just posted, "Hey, does the ACLJ do any notable work?" I think maybe in the next segment you should break down some of the 30 plus, nearly 40 year history of the work of the ACLJ and some of the ones we have done. But yes, we are deeply involved at the highest level and in the individual level.
All right, folks, we'll be right back on Secular. We're going to get into DeSantis. We didn't have time yesterday, so I want to get your calls on that. Are any of you 100% with DeSantis yet? By the way, no judgment from us if you are. We really just want to hear from our audience. To Secular, we are taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We wanted to broaden it out because it looks like we are less than a week away from Ron DeSantis entering the presidential race. We talked about the Secular Brothers podcast, but we haven't had time to talk about it on our larger Secular podcast, Secular broadcast, which is both on terrestrial radio, SiriusXM, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, you know, so many different places you can go to listen or watch. And I really want to give people an opportunity to let us know, are you already 100% in with DeSantis? That's question one. Are you already 100% in with Trump? Or are you in between? And I say that because I feel like that's probably where most people are. I love Tim Scott. I love Nikki Haley. Yeah.
Tim Scott formally announced today.
And Tim Scott did. And listen, would I like to see him on the rise? Sure.
Absolutely.
But I feel like right now it feels like the choice is, if DeSantis does do what he says he will do, that the choice is kind of feels like Trump DeSantis right now, at least.
Yeah, right
now. So I'd love to hear from you on that. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110.
Sure. We'll take one in a minute, but I do think that is true. People are seeing the fact that DeSantis, you know, has made the decision. I believe the decision is made. It is happening. It would be a major shift for it not to happen next week. It's not like he's refuting the claims. That means stuff is at the printers. The shirts are being made. The signs exist. A lot of the campaign materials are out there. So yeah, I think it's pretty safe to assume that DeSantis will be announcing next week, barring something wild. I think it will happen. You did have Tim Scott. And look, what I've said, I don't care really who you support, whether it's Trump or DeSantis or Tim Scott or Nikki Haley. I'm just interested to see a field of people actually, you know, trying to get our votes. And we're not just having a 100% already decided. Mainly because I find it entertaining. I enjoy a debate. I enjoy the election season. And if we don't even get some fun Republican debates, I'll be disappointed just as someone who's a fan of politics, who's a fan of watching it. If it's just Trump again, great, no problem, whatever. But it's not going to be the same kind of electricity in the season you have of getting to watch all these just different debates, getting to see conservatives talk to other conservatives, which I always think is important because that's really the mainstay here. It's not about whether you're going to vote. Most of the people, you know, 98% of people probably know if they're voting Republican or Democrat. Now we need to figure out who you're going to vote for in between. Let's go ahead and go to Warren, who's calling on line one with his thoughts. Warren, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. I encourage everybody to support you. I do as much as I can. But I like DeSantis. I think he'd be a great president. And I think he'd be a great vice president. But honestly, I think we need Donald Trump, President Trump, for 4 more years to straighten this mess out, and then 8 years of DeSantis.
Yeah, it seems like that would be a perfect world, right? I mean, it does. And listen, it's not that that couldn't happen. Trump could win the primary, could win the White House, and DeSantis could come in a close second, decide not to join the administration, can't be VP unless they changed.
One of the laws is that you can't leave from
Trump
the same state.
Change his state
residency
again, which I don't see him doing. They can't be president, vice president. But you certainly could see where, because DeSantis could serve out his term as governor, that takes him basically into when you'd start campaigning for the next presidential cycle. Because I do think it's a good problem to have when you have a few very strong candidates on the bench. Because I'd add Tim Scott to that. He might not be getting the same kind of attention nationwide, but I've seen his events across the country, and he's doing great. He's also raising a lot of money. But what I would say is that when you add that if we can somehow get him through this process without DeSantis being totally destroyed by Donald Trump, I would love to see Trump and then go into DeSantis. I think a lot of people are there.
I think people felt that way maybe about a Ted Cruz. They thought maybe that just the Trump, you want to say attacks, but the Trump, you know, language towards him maybe did hurt him. But that may be with the short term. Long term, we've seen Ted Cruz be very successful and kind of been able to win that crowd back over. With DeSantis, I do think it's different. When it comes to a vice presidential candidate, even if he could, I don't think he would. I watched a video that Sean Spicer put out yesterday, and I agree with him completely, which is, that's not really who you want as your vice president. Someone who could kind of, not that he would overshadow Trump, but has that same kind of energy and gravitas. You need someone, not Mike Pence, but you need someone like Mike Pence, or honestly, for Biden, you see why he picked a Kamala Harris, though I think she'd be completely ineffective. Someone who is not going to overshadow the presidency.
I think if you're Donald Trump, you'd be looking at people like Tim Scott.
Yeah. Calm, under pressure.
Very good with the economic issues and business
trustworthy.
Community. Trustworthy. People really like him. Kind of a steady hand.
Yep.
A very different personality.
I think he'd be good.
And again, there's others. I'm not trying to exclude other people that are. I have a lot of friends.
I just don't see DeSantis being that. I don't see him coming in and being even wanting to really take the vice presidency. At that point, be a governor of Florida, one of the biggest states in the country.
And then run again.
And then run again when you have the opportunity. We're still screening some more calls. You can give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. John's calling from the state of California. John, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to you guys for a long time and donate because of what you guys do. You really bring to light true news. And you guys were just talking about Trump and the different candidates. And it's pretty simple. I'm a businessman. I'm a real estate broker. Trump, I relate to him because he's a businessman. He doesn't look at it like a politician. He doesn't really care. He's going to do what's best for the country. And if anybody watched the 4 years that he ran it, the mistake he made, he didn't clean the people that were existing there. He got rid of some of them, but not the ones that went behind his back and what have you. I think him getting into the office again, because you learn from mistakes. I don't think he'll ever do that again. And some of the stuff he said, yeah, okay. I got buddies that they're staunch conservatives. And they said, he could have said it a little bit different. Yes, he could have. But look at what he did. Look at what the man accomplished. And I applaud you guys because you're very fair with all candidates. But I think right now he's the winner.
The polls show it too. I mean, so John, you're right. And I think that it's set up for a unique election. And I didn't know if we were going to be there 6 months ago, but I think we are, where people could once again put aside maybe some of the idiosyncrasies about Trump that I don't love the tweeting, or maybe he's a little too brash for me. But you know what? Maybe we need a little bit of that rhetoric when dealing with Putin and Xi.
I think that
and just kind of someone who feels like really strong. Really tough, the opposite of Joe Biden, especially with inflation out of control and a U.S. economy faltering.
I think the town hall was a wake-up call for a lot of people.
Yeah.
They realized that they did miss that personality. They did miss feeling like there was a secure...
Just apart the liberal media.
And just could also felt like when he said stuff like, I'm going to end the war in Ukraine and Russia in 24 hours, they're like, oh, well, that's a breath of fresh air. You haven't heard anything like that for the last few years. So to have that was a bit of a eye-opener for me even, as someone who is excited about having a new... group of people potentially running. I went, okay, well, those are some of the words that I like to hear. And I kind of believe it coming from Trump.
It was interesting. We got a comment in about ACLJ's legal work.
Yeah.
I was just going to go through quickly.
Yeah, I'll just set up. There's thousands of you who watch online who maybe are just joining us because we've only, Rumble or something like that's a pretty new place for us to be broadcasting. We've been doing this show for 27 years with our dad. And the ACLJ has been at this since the early 90s, really the late 80s, early 90s. So we've been at it for a long time, doing a lot of great work. And someone asked, well, do they do anything that's important? And I think I wanted to
The Supreme Court cases we've done at the ACLJ. Board of Airport Commissioners versus Jews for Jesus. Board of Education versus Bergens. U.S. versus Coquinda. Bray versus Alexandria Women's Health Clinic. We had to re-argue Bray. Lamb's Chapel versus a school district. The National Law Journal, twice named. Seculo is one of the most influential lawyers in the United States. That's our dad. A Sheik versus Pro-Life Network of Western New York. There's another Supreme Court case.
Pro-life one.
American lawyer named Seculo is the distinguished attorney group, the public sector 45. There's Hill versus Colorado. These are all SCOTUS cases. Santa Fe School District versus Doe. Operation Rescue versus National Organization for Women. McConnell versus FEC, where we took down part of an unconstitutional provision of the FEC provision of McCain-Feingold. And Gentala versus City of Tucson. Locke versus Davey. Elk Grove versus Newnow. Time magazine named our dad one of the 25 most influential evangelicals in America and called the ACLJ the powerful counterweight to the ACLU. We did Van Orden versus Perry, Gonzalez v. Carhart. That's, again, a partial birth abortion case. U.S. versus Williams. Gonzalez versus Planned Parenthood. Pleasant Grove versus Summit. And that does not include the three cases we did on behalf of President Trump at the U.S. Supreme Court. That is just our U.S. Supreme Court work. That is not our international court work, our appellate court work, or district court work, or state court work. That is just the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yep, we're going to be taking a lot of your calls. A lot of you have called in about your thoughts on DeSantis and Trump. So I'm going to tell you, we're going to take as many of those as we can coming up in the next segment. So keep calling if you get a busy signal, which I know is rare to hear these days. You actually can hear a busy signal if you call us sometimes. Go to ACLJ.org to support the work and continue to be in the fight with us. We really would appreciate it, especially right now, heading into the summer and heading into a big 2024. Give us a call, though, right now. There's a couple lines open. 1-800-684-3110. I'm going to say it slower for you. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to Secul. We are taking your calls too. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Want to get into a little politics. I also want to do this. If you are watching on Rumble right now, we are just about, I think it's 300 people away from getting to 200,000 followers on Rumble. So click that follow button. I know there's enough of you watching right now. Just click that follow button for us, we can get to 200,000. We don't often say that and put a lot of weight into that because, again, but it'd be nice. And we'd really appreciate it. It doesn't cost you a dime. You just do it. To get us to that number, 200,000, we would really appreciate it. We'll get right back to content. So we've asked people about DeSantis. We've asked people about Trump. And we're focusing it on DeSantis because the leak that went out is that he is going to announce his campaign next Thursday. He's going to launch a presidential campaign. Tim Scott formally took his from an exploratory committee to a full-blown campaign. So it looks like the field is getting bigger. One of my takeaways, I think Logan agrees, is that I think Donald Trump does best when he is in a bit of a fight. It focuses him. It gets him ready for battle so that when he, if he does get the nomination and he is up against Joe Biden, he's in the best fighting form possible. So more like 2016 Trump than 2020 Trump, who didn't have to go through that process. But Logan, let's go to the phones.
Yep, let's go ahead. Let's go to first Janet, who is calling from Florida on line one. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I love your program. Would just like to say that we like Trump. We voted for him in our household in 2016, again in 2020. I'm from Navarre, Florida, near Pensacola. We love our governor, DeSantis. We love him here. So I think Trump needs to be very careful how much he slams DeSantis because it might make a lot of Floridians really angry, and I know he needs this state.
Janet, as someone who spends a lot of time in Florida, as a property owner in the state of Florida, I've seen a lot of my friends who have expressed similar sentiment, who have said, you know, we're big fans of DeSantis. I don't know if I really want this fight to happen. They've honestly been a little even concerned with DeSantis running because they don't necessarily want, like you said, for him to be completely torn down by all of this that could come.
Now remember, he's going to also fight Janet against Donald Trump. So he's going to take swipes at Trump, and Trump is going to respond. I mean, he has every right to do so. So it does impact Florida voters uniquely because that's your governor. What is also interesting in Florida is that most of the congressional delegation in Florida endorsed Donald Trump because they said they've had such a hard time working with Ron DeSantis. Now, that would not have been Ron DeSantis. It would have been his staff. So I'd like to hear more from people, too, like on that. When you've had issues with the state and you've tried to contact the governor's office, was it like impossible? Did you feel like you weren't being treated right? I mean, because we hear this theme a lot. I don't know how accurate it is. I think maybe there's obviously some communications issues at the top. I mean, members of Congress from his own state should be able to get meetings with him and phone calls with him whenever they need him.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of mixed feelings on that, a lot of mixed thoughts. I've also seen a lot of people come out who were pro DeSantis and then honestly have got involved in the Disney thing and are a little concerned about that because of how, look, we saw yesterday Disney pulled out of their big project, bringing, you know, thousands of people to the state and bringing two things to Central Florida. I think there are some people who look at that and go, great, we don't want them here. I think there's another set of people that go, this is, you know, hurting business in the state of Florida. If you're, especially if you're not necessarily a social conservative, there are a lot of people who are not social conservatives who voted for Ron DeSantis because a lot of his lockdown situation, which, by the way, I had a lot of conversations because there were things that I did not like about the original lockdown situation in Florida. People give him a lot of credit. I think he deserves a lot of credit for the way it was treated. Like I said, you had those theme parks in Central Florida opened within 90 days of the original lockdown in March. That was pretty impressive. But you had situations like me who has a house there who I rented out. I wasn't allowed to rent it out while the hotels were allowed to open and thrive. So there were some kind of issues there early on, but a lot of people struggled early on to figure out really what to do in this situation. So I don't think it's necessarily one or the other. I'm excited DeSantis is in it because mainly I think it's going to bring some needed debate and value to the next 6 months of the election, even the next 6 months to a year. You'll actually have President Trump and Governor Ron DeSantis pushed on issues that are important to us, not just liberals looking at them and going, you're bad.
And it means that the Republican candidate, whoever that is, will have a lot more time in the media than Joe Biden because there is an actual primary occurring. If there was no real primary, they would just cover every once in a while. But if you got real active debates and real active campaigning, then it'll be beneficial to whoever arises out of the Republican field because they will have gotten the attention from the media, which we now, the media has taken off these, and so has social media, has taken off the limits on Trump.
A lot of them, yeah. I mean, you may see some pushback, but not, it's not, we can no longer just, but before, we couldn't play a clip from President Trump without YouTube potentially taking us down. That has been lifted. It's happened on Facebook and all of them. A lot of that is gone because they called it platforming. But when I look at what's happening in the state of Florida, and I think we should take another quick call, I think it's pretty interesting to see. A lot of people are asking how deep is the bench in Florida? What happens if DeSantis is gone? They actually have a big group of people in Florida who could really step in and do a great job.
With a strong Republican Party.
Great, some great people that we really like here. Let's go to Victoria, who's calling in New Jersey. Victoria, quickly, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you so much, Jay, for taking my call. I am a woman from New Jersey. I also voted for Trump, and I support him. I am a staunch conservative, and I'm very thankful that he brought us pro-life conservatives to the Supreme Court and brought us the safety of our babies. But I also am offended by a lot of what he has said against women. And I do believe that we have a very horrible old man in the White House now. And I'm also fearful that as a woman, he has offended many other women, and the battle will be in 2024 of two old men. And as a woman, I think that with a lot of never Trumpers that are going to be voting, I would like to get us into a more moderate. We got to get it that we're going to have a strong, young, conservative man. And I think DeSantis has a very strong, conservative, moral backbone. Then nobody would ever be able to say that he is anti-woman, that he is offensive to women.
Jump in right there. I mean, he has been the most aggressive on the abortion laws, on the trans laws, on the drag queen laws, on the banning of
if
books.
If you're a conservative woman, I think is what she's saying.
If you're a conservative woman.
That's more, I think, what she was saying. With some of the people who have had problems.
I'm not upset that he is.
People have had problems with Trump. A lot of them had it because of personal stuff. Not necessarily
I get that.
That's more, I think, what she was referring to.
I get that. But I think if you're talking, use the word moderate once. And that's what triggered me. I was like, he is not a moderate, Ron DeSantis.
No.
And he is not going to get moderate votes. He, in fact, might get less moderate votes than Donald Trump.
I think that's true. I saw some people yesterday going, hey, I don't like Trump's business stuff, and I don't like him personally.
But he has a push a ton
of
social policies.
But I don't think he's evil. And they're like, you know, if you're a hard leftist, do you think a lot of the social policies coming out of Ron DeSantis
it's interesting.
Are
it's very
evil.
Interesting because in some ways they're very similar. In other ways, they are not. And so we will see how that contrast is made, where the tone is kind of similar. The tough guy of governance is similar. You know, do what I want, get done what I want to do, and DeSantis has done a good job of that in Florida. I would love to have seen that DeSantis could kind of finish out the term,
sure. And
because I think he would be a great president too. I really do.
Well, we'll see what happens. I'm excited about it. I hope you are too. We'll be back next week with more on Seculo. You can obviously find us archived later on ACLJ.
All the ACLJ work we talked about. Go to aclj.org, and if you can, donate so we can do even more of that work.